Okay, I can only take so much of that. I gotta stop that. I can't go the full 30 seconds.
What was that?
I, you know, no judgment. There's a lot of music that was uploaded to our studio, and I need to dip back in there because I get glow sticks. I want some water.
I think last time I got Green Day. I don't even know what that was.
No, not that I would do ecstasy, but the, you know, just it conjures up a different me, and I want to keep this pure, keep this focused.
Right.
And Jeremy, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing all right, man. You know, seems that we're about 40 minutes from each other. We could be at a coffee shop somewhere doing the show today, because I'm in Arlington and you're not in Arlington. You're up north, right?
I'm in Denton.
That's right. Which is technically
north.
So yeah,
you know, the funny thing is I've seen you more outside of Texas than I've seen you in Texas, I think.
Well, I hide a lot. Let's be honest.
Right.
I'm better via social networks. There's always a letdown,
right?
When people are like, oh, I thought you were taller. Great. There you go. So do us a favor. Tell the audience a little bit about yourself.
All right. So my name's Jeremy Roberts. I am currently the editor of SourceCon, and, you know, with the editor title is kind of, it doesn't really say what I do. My primary responsibilities are kind of, really kind of a community manager for the SourceCon community, and then I put together the agenda for the SourceCon conferences. So it's a great opportunity for me. I spent almost 12 years in recruiting. So I started on the agency side, and then I transitioned into corporate recruiting, and then my last job I was leading a sourcing team. I think we had 26 was the biggest we got. 26 sourcers supporting a recruiting team for a large RPO engagement. So that was my last job before becoming a conference organizer and blogger. So anyway, that's kind of my background and how I got to where I am.
So the cool thing here is you've been a practitioner. Now you're helping kind of advance topically and help build out what has been a pretty cool community. It's the, for me, SourceCon's always kind of been the hacker community within HR, and more particularly within recruiting. It's our own little hacker group of people that do things, you know, within the rules, of course, but then they kind of blow up all the rules and blow up all the tools. And I like that. I like that crowd. I've never been a sourcer. I don't really understand, you know, how a lot of it works, but I like the crowd of people that are around sourcing. So I got to start off.
No, they're a lot of fun.
So what pisses you off about sourcing? What angers you? Let's go negative. It's American politics.
Yeah.
Let's go negative.
Really. You know,
ups the ante for you? What makes you angry?
Well, what makes me angry? Okay, so let's start. It the most frustrating thing for a sourcer, okay, and we're going to talk. First of all, I want to define sourcing. Sourcing is a function that everyone in talent acquisition is responsible for. So there are people who are actual sourcers, and that's their only job. They spend 100% of their day sourcing. Then there are recruiters who spend, you know, some recruiters source for 20% of their day, some for 60 or 70%, but so sourcing itself is, you know, it's an activity. It's not a job title. There's a very small percentage of people who are actual sourcers, and that's all they do. And so I'm going to answer this question from that perspective. So for the people who are just sourcers, and that's all they do, 100% of their day is sourcing candidates and handing them off to recruiters. So the worst thing that a sourcer has to deal with is dealing with recruiters, recruiting managers, and recruiting leaders who don't have client control. And so, and what I'm saying here is that they take a job from, you know, the hiring manager, and they tell the sourcer what they want, and it's like the perfect candidate that, you know, it's
basically we need all of these requirements plus these needs, and there are like three of them in the country. And then the recruiter during the intake call did not probe and expand the definition of the job and open them up to different types of candidates. They just sent them the requisition as find me these perfect candidates. And then the recruiter and hiring manager, there's just never any pushback to make it more of a fillable search. So dealing with people who can't manage their clients is the most frustrating thing for a sourcer to deal with. And what makes it even worse is if you escalate it and the recruiting manager can't go to the HR manager and the hiring manager and have that conversation. And then even worse than that is when some HR generalist who wants to be a VP of HR was put over recruiting, and you go to them about it, and they don't understand what you're talking about. And so basically they're just pushing it all downhill, telling you to go find these perfect people who don't actually exist. So that's the biggest frustration.
So let's back up real quick. If you and I were hired at a company and they've never done sourcing in whatever way, they just or the ways that they have, they're so arcane that we can't even consider them sourcing, how would we build it from the ground up?
Yeah, so that's hard to say because, I mean, you'd have to understand so much about the recruiting department or, you know, it's every – first of all, every department is so different. The bottlenecks are taking place at different parts of the organization. So you would have to identify where the bottlenecks are taking place. I mean, if the bottlenecks are with the hiring managers, you need to hire recruiters who can manage the hiring managers and manage the process and push the process, and HR generalists who will educate the hiring managers and help drive that process forward. If the bottleneck is in, you know, everything else is working and you don't have enough candidate flow, you know, and your recruiters have time to make phone calls, then you could put in sourcers who just give the recruiters lists of names so they can call them. If the recruiters are tied up with OFCCP compliance and processing candidates and interviews and dispositioning candidates, then they don't have time to call those people. Then you need a group of sourcers who are actually engaging the candidates. So there are a lot of variables there that you would have to explore to really give a good answer to that. Hopefully I'm going the right direction with the question.
You're doing fine. All right, I want to dig in because you used the word relationship about four times. The relationship between HR and recruiting and sourcing. Again, let's deal with the most perfect world, not how things are kind of broken apart, but if we could actually fix things and say, here should be the relationship. So between HR and recruiting, recruiting and sourcing, what should those relationships be like?
Yeah, so this is a great question, and I think it starts at the very, very top. Typically in organizations that I've been involved in, you want to be with an organization where the VP of HR and the HR department have so much respect from the business that, I hate the seat at the table analogy, but that they have that seat at the table, that the business listens to HR. Okay, and then from there, you want they're not just doing what the business says; they're actually advising the business. The business is taking that advice. Okay, so from there, if you've got that healthy relationship at the very top, then it's much easier to have the healthy relationship within HR and recruiting and sourcing. And the reason is because you're all working towards the end goal, and if the HR leadership doesn't have the respect of the business, then they're never going to push back on the business if the business is the hurdle. They're going to constantly be pushing, you know, send us more candidates, we're not making enough placements. Well, the problem is these hiring managers, just send us more candidates, you know. So it really starts with a healthy relationship at the top, and then you know, good SLAs and good understanding between the entire team. That's a very simple answer, but hopefully it addresses it somewhat.
And now I want to get your take on, you know, the pathway into our wonderful world. People can kind of come through the staffing world, you know, to go and work with Robert Half and Associates and whatever, kind of come through the third-party independent, et cetera. And then there's folks on the corporate side that kind of come up through the corporate ranks, et cetera. And there's a lot of variations in between those. Is there any difference between sourcing in the staffing world and sourcing in the corporate world?
Yeah, there is, actually. I mean, it's a good question. I think I've known, first of all, I want to say I've known really good people who came from both sides of the business, from staffing or from the corporate world. In the corporate world, there needs to be really good training. That's something that I, you know, in the staffing world, you know, if there wasn't a good training program, you know, they pretty much learned it on their own, or they learned it, or they wouldn't have survived a couple of years. You know, so it's a good litmus test if they survive for a couple of years that they'll be able to hack it. But in the corporate world, I mean, there are going to be some brands that, you know, they've trained their people well, and that's good. But yeah, there is the problems for sourcing in corporate are just way bigger than they are for sourcing an agency. So for sourcing an agency, it's how do I find this candidate quickly, get them engaged, and move forward. And then what you see sourcing teams doing a lot more in larger organizations is managing humongous databases of people. So it's a different set of problems. It's how do I cut through thousands of people? And oftentimes the biggest companies with the best brand, it's harder to be a sourcer because you're having to cut through so much data and so many candidates. So it's a very different set of problems. In an agency, it's how do I get this candidate on the phone today, you know? So it's much more, I don't know. You're it's kind of real time, just in time recruiting, as opposed to like the what you see a lot of times in corporate, the talent communities and talent pipeline building.
Well, that begs the question: should corporate be more like staffing agencies?
I don't want to oversimplify. I think people who approach corporate recruiting with a staffing agency mindset do really, really well. But you know, the problems, the long-term problems that corporate recruiting departments have to solve require a lot more strategic thought. So on a day-to-day individual practitioner level, I think yes, approach it like a staffing agency. But the problems are much bigger, and you can save a lot of money down the road by these big strategic sourcing initiatives.
Yeah, this is the Lamborghini versus Hummer argument. If you're going off road, better to have a Lamborghini. If you're in Dallas, just kidding. It's better to have a Lamborghini. All right, so we both got kids, and we follow each other on Instagram. So there's a lot of fun stuff that happens there. But if one of your kids came to you and said, "Daddy, I want to learn sourcing," how would you build them from the ground up to really be the best sourcer in the world?
You know, that's a fun thing. We actually homeschool our kids, and so it's fun. I get to see what they're doing every day. When I step into the other room to grab my lunch, I get to see what's going on with them. But, you know, I think building curiosity, what makes a good sourcer is curiosity, not being the kind of person that when you hit a wall, you stop trying and ask someone for help. I had that conversation with one of my kids yesterday. She was like, "Well, I don't understand this." And I'm like, "Well, look it up." And she's, "Well, how do I look it up?" And I'm like, "Well, you Google it. Yeah. Ask this question to the search engine and see what comes up, you know?" So learning how to think and solve problems for yourself. We play a lot of chess at our house, and I love that, you know, my kids learning strategy and thinking as opposed to just, you know, memorizing yes and no types of things. Another thing, I think being really technical. Some of the best sourcers I know, they know a little bit of coding, so they can kind of hack things together and they can look at an API and figure out how to get candidate information, contact details from that API. And so last year, my daughter asked me about coding, and she's 13 now, and I showed her Code Academy, and so she's about 3/4 of the way through JavaScript training in Code Academy. And so just fun things like that, just getting more technical as far as learning how to think is just every time you run into a problem, start backing out of it and looking at every solution to solve it.
Nice. You know, I just read something today that curiosity is more important than EQ, IQ, or some of the other things that people typically scan for, screen for, is just the mm-hmm. one's ability to be curious. Not by curious, just curious. So
one of the things when I'm doing training, you'll see someone in the training class, and then you'll be showing them how to, you know, just something basic, like write an X-ray string to search LinkedIn, you know, how to X-ray into LinkedIn or how to, you know, do a site search of, you know, some sort of association. You show them the Boolean string and how to build it and how to think about it, and how to back out of the URL to see the directory pages and things like that. You'll teach them how to do all this. At the end, they'll write down the search string, and then they'll call you, you know, 3 weeks later, and, hey, your search string broke. Can you give me another one? It's like, well, what about that hour I showed you how to actually think to create that search string? And so when you're hiring sourcers, that's what you want to avoid are those people who, you know, they see the solution and then they run and use it, but they never really figure out how to get a solution.
All right, so now I've got to back up and ask the question, if we were building a sourcing department from the ground up, blank slate, you and I go into a company, no one's ever done sourcing, but it's this sourcing company, what technologies should we be looking at? So now people really want to know, it's not just the relationship that we have with the talent acquisition folks or hiring managers or HR. You've already done a great job of kind of pinning that stuff down. What's the technology stack of sourcers today? What is it? Because, you know, you've been a practitioner. You've done this, but you also evaluate a ton of technology.
Yeah, so in a department, okay, so it's funny. I had a conversation the other day with a group of people, and we were trying to figure out, Animal asked some people on our show about what's the best LinkedIn account to buy, okay? And the question was, you know, what's the best LinkedIn account for an individual practitioner to buy? And the answer to that question is free. You know, don't spend any money. If it's your money, don't spend it, because you can do so much without it. From a departmental perspective, a LinkedIn recruiter account is probably a good idea because it gets you moving a little bit faster. It's a little bit easier to do some of the things that you can do on the outside without it. So, you know, LinkedIn recruiter might be a good thing to add. But before that even, I think a really good CRM system is the most important thing, a place to house all of the applicants and sort the data and pull reports and track the activity of the team. I've implemented a couple of times. I've implemented a CRM system within a sourcing function. And, you know, once you've got that, basically a good CRM is going to connect to a lot of the social networks. It's going to do a lot of searching. Like, basically, you can enter all of your job board passwords and search all the job boards at once. You can you know, import things from LinkedIn and from other social networks. So the foundational thing would be a really good CRM, like a Bullhorn or an Avatar, something like that. So,
all right, let's pivot over to SourceCon, both the community and the events that you have. So first of all, let's talk about the event that you've got coming up. Tell us, because, you know, you put these things together. You've attended a bunch of these things, and so you know kind of what makes a good event and what doesn't. As if the audience isn't familiar at all with SourceCon, take us into what the events kind of look like and how did you program it?
Yeah, so SourceCon started in 2007, 2008 timeframe. It was really, at that point, searching for candidates on the internet was just really new, you know. You had to be pretty technical, and there was that one person in every office who was really good at finding lists of people on the internet and directories and things like that. And so SourceCon really was kind of like a place where, you know, internet researchers would gather and share tips and tricks. And it kind of grew out of that, and there's like this total hacker vibe there where everybody is there to kind of show off their things they figured out and learn from each other. It's a very open, great community. And so over the years, it's grown. I think, you know, it went from, you know, 50 to 100, 125, two shows we had last year, I had 425 people. So it's gotten pretty big, and that has made it difficult because you've got such a broad range of people there, and so we cover everything at all that you could think of with regard to identifying candidates online and with the phone and any other way you could source candidate names, and then helping people get contact details and then engage people. So we kind of stretched it into engagement because that is the direction that the business is going. So, you know, like I said, it's gotten hard to program it because our events gotten so big. So we have three different tracks. We've got, well, first of all, we've got our general sessions, and we make sure the general sessions are relevant for everyone. So if you source candidates, whether your title is sourcer or recruiter, doesn't matter if you work in a third-party agency, an RPO, or corporate recruiting, the general sessions are going to be relevant to you. And then we have three tracks on top of that. One of them is a fundamentals track, so it's kind of for newer sourcers and recruiters trying to learn the fundamentals of the business. And then we have a leadership track where people like Jerry Crispin lead panels, and I've got the team from Target who's actually laying out how they've structured their sourcing team. And then we've got the sourcing labs, which are really, really technical. So we're going to walk people through, you know, web scraping and exploiting APIs for candidate information, that's a really fun one. And then how to find and validate email addresses. So just basically anything technical you could think of with regard to finding candidate information online is covered in those labs. So it's really, it's 100% tactical except for the leadership track. And so really that's our core audience, about 85% individual practitioners with either a sourcer or recruiter title.
So who are some of the pillars of sourcing? If someone's new to recruiting, talent acquisition, and they really kind of want to get a feel for who are just some of the people that they should kind of catch up and go, yeah, you're going to want to go follow these people on Twitter. You're going to go want to consume these blogs. Like, there's always pillars in any community. Who are these folks?
So first of all, I don't consider myself one of those people. I'm lucky enough to kind of sit in the middle of them and get to kind of play ringmaster and kind of bring them all together a couple times a year. So if you look at any of our agendas right now, like if you look at our agenda for the fall SourceCon, all of the speakers, you know, fit that description. The place that I learned the most when I was starting out was Glenn Caffey's blog, BooleanBlackBelt.com. Glenn was, he was really the first sourcing blog that I came across, and then also SourceCon. I learned a lot from SourceCon before I actually worked here. So another person is Johnny Campbell with Social Talent. Is just, you know, he writes some good things, but he's just a great communicator. And so, you know, I this is a tough one because I learned so much from so many people in our space. But if you go to SourceCon and you look at all of our writers, all of their bios will have a link to their personal blogs. And that would be the first thing I would do is go look at all of our authors and then find their personal blogs and follow them on Twitter.
Yeah, Twitter is amazing for that. I, at one point, because someone asked me, and I was bored, I went and built a list of sourcers. I think it's probably got 50 on there. But, again, there's far more great voices than 50. I just got tired.
Yeah, no, it's a tough question, you know. Amy Beth Hale has written some really cool stuff. She was the editor before I was, and she's gone back to – she was a practitioner all along and went back. Eric Jaquith doesn't write very much, but he's somebody I've learned a lot from as I've gotten to know him over the years. I mean, there are so many, and I dislike that question only because there are so many and I couldn't list them all.
Right. No joke. So your current – favorite sourcing hack. What's your favorite hack right now? And these things, I know you change them like you change your underwear, but just your favorite current hack.
You know, man, that's a tough question. I don't think it's really a, it's not a hack, but it is, Yeah, I guess it is. I mean, if you go onto the go onto the website sourcekind.com and look for Matt Ferree. His last name is called F-E-R-R-E-E. And Matt Ferree, he's very technical, and he is a coder, and he recruits technical talent out in San Francisco. And he figured out a way by looking at the GitHub API to he built this little extension where if you drop a GitHub user ID into it, it will give you that person's contact information. It is the funniest thing. And so Matt called me about it. He's like, Jeremy, this is awesome. And I was like, okay, well, we're going to get a cease and desist if we send that, if we write that blog post. And so he took it to the GitHub bounty program. We called Nicole, and Nicole Strecker, and we're like, Nicole, how would you handle this? Because she's an attorney and also a sourcer. And she said, well, you need to send it to the bounty program. And then once the bounty program, gives you permission, they either they fix it or they say, we're not going to fix it. And so they, in this case, they decided not to fix it. And because we took it to them first, we were able to write about it. And so Matt shared it. But there's that. I mean, there are a bunch of little things like that. And then right now, a lot of the things that used to be just hacks, people have developed into Chrome extensions. You know, you've got Connect 6, Connect to Fire, all these different Chrome extensions that let you cross-reference other social networks when you're looking at someone's profile. Those are probably my favorites right now, like the Connect to Fire type programs. Three sourcing released one they sent me today. I haven't played with it yet. But, those kinds of cross-referencing tools, I think, are the biggest thing right now. And the great thing is most of them are totally free.
So in a couple minutes we have left, I want to talk a little bit about content, because you put a bunch of great content together for the community, et cetera. And you're always looking at other things outside of sourcing as well. But what's some content that's just maybe you didn't think that there was some legs to it, you put it there, and all of a sudden it took off? So I'm always amazed at the thing that you're like, kind of an interesting topic.
Yeah. There are
7,000 comments
there. Yeah, there are things out there that you'll put it out there and you won't realize how important it was, but it will really strike a nerve. And pretty much all of them that have really struck a nerve over the last 12 months has been about kind of the recruiting and sourcing relationship, and they're always – it's funny because some of my most well-performing content this year has been – it's not like the – Craig Fisher, Bill Borman, Matt Charney. It's not these people who we all know are on the cutting edge. It's a practitioner in the trenches. It's the first blog post they ever wrote, and it's just real, and you'll read it, and it's like, well, this is good. I don't disagree with any of it. I'm going to run it and see what happens. And it'll get shared 600 times on LinkedIn. But I've got four or five of those, and none of them are coming to mind in terms of the exact issue that they called out. But people want to hear from practitioners who are not, considered thought leaders or, consultants or organizers. They want to hear from people in a desk like them that are executing every day, And so I'm always surprised. I mean, things that I don't realize how good they are just really take hold.
All right, really quickly, when's the next SourceCon?
October 1st and 2nd in Denver. So,
and
you're going, right?
Good. I'm still working on my schedule. I'm trying. I'm trying.
Okay.
I am trying. The the website is as simple as SourceCon.com, right?
SourceCon.com, and in the top you'll see SourceCon Denver, but it's 2014 Denver.SourceCon.com if you want to go directly to the
Denver. And Denver is a part of Colorado, and Colorado has a new and interesting approach to all kinds of great things. So you should travel to Colorado just for that. How can people reach out? First of all, this has been great, Jeremy. How can people reach out to you and just follow some of the stuff that you're doing?
Yeah, so SourceCon.com is the first thing. And then I tweet for SourceCon, so @SourceCon. My personal Twitter is I'm Jeremy R, which I know is a horrible screen name is I Am Jeremy R. And other than that, I mean, I love Google Plus as well. I'm always on Google Plus. Plus Jeremy Roberts, if you want to go find me there.
Well, all right, my brother. Listen, the sun is out. We are going to have a wonderful day. It was wonderful talking with you, and thanks
you
again
too.
For everyone listening to Drive Through HR.
Thanks for having me.